Ladies, gentlemen, geeks of all ages, you are now entering BJ Shea's Geek Nation. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to BJ Shea's Geek Nation. I am the Reverend Enfuego. Across from me is Vicky Barcelona.
Hi.
We've got the show's namesake, BJ Shea.
Well, hello.
And running the boards is Joey Deez.
Wow.
Yo, yo.
On today's show, we will talk about Magic the Gathering and the Puget Sound Battleground 2.
Dun, dun, dun.
In keeping with the tabletop gaming theme, we'll get some board game reviews from Mr. BJ Shea.
Okay.
And of course, the Geek Sheet with Vicky B. Vicky, how can people get a hold of us?
Get a hold of us via our website, bjgeeknation.com, because it's coming out all our blogs, podcasts, and more.
Or
just type in BJ Geek Nation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, and the radio.com app.
Yeah, and if you are on those iTunes and the Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review, tell us why you love us, and once we get some more, we'll be reading a little bit of them.
Yeah, please do.
Always fun to do. Joe.
Hello.
BJ.
Yes.
And myself are all big Magic the Gathering fans, so I want to get on and just talk a little bit with my buddy Dylan, who has a great comic book store and board game and Magic the Gathering store up in the Snohomish area, which is up north in the Seattle area in the Pacific Northwest. And it's called Geek Fortress. And we talked with him a while back, or I talked with him a while back, about the Puget Sound Battleground that he had. And now he's got another one of those. And, of course, I want to talk a little bit about the Throne of Eldraine with him as well. Dylan, last year we talked about the Puget Sound. Was it last year for Puget Sound Battleground?
It was last May. So,
it's
6 months.
Okay, so you've it's not an annual thing. It's a looks like what, biannual at this point.
Yeah, and it's funny because this is what actually, like, people, as soon as it ended, they're like, "When's the next one?" And I'm just like, "Oh man." Like, maybe there should be another one and not just another year from now.
And so this is the Puget Sound Battleground number 2. And how did the first one go? The first one you had down in Tacoma, which I'm a fan of because I'm from Tacoma. It seems like it went well. It seems like you had a good time there.
Yeah. No, it went great. There was a couple of hiccups, just like any event can have.
Uh-huh.
But it went really well. Everyone had a great time, and more importantly, like, the artists, like, some of them came up to me and, like, thanked me for having such a great event, because they go to these bigger events where there's thousands of people, and it's just nonstop. This one, they still had a great day, like, financially,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't have the pressure of having 6,000 people over the course of a 3-day GP or whatever come up.
Yeah, so. Or like that. Now what they've turned, basically they've turned the Magic tournaments, instead of like the Grand Prix, it's all these things rolled into one, being the Magic Fest.
Magic Fest, yes.
And so now with the Puget Sound Battleground, you're incorporating that, not on the gigantic scale on that, but still some really, really amazing names for artists, and we'll get to them very soon. But this is happening up north this time at the Angel of the Winds Arena up in Everett on the second floor of the main hall, correct?
Yeah. It's the Edward D. Hansen Convention Center, which is literally just attached to the Angel of the Winds Arena.
Okay,
so it's the
perfect.
Same building. It's just the arena is where they have, like, hockey, and then the convention center is where they do conventions and stuff like that.
Oh, perfect. So, yeah. And this is happening November 9th and 10th. We're a little ways out from there. This is the beginning of October, but we wanted to make sure and get the word out, because if you're a fan of Magic the Gathering, this is... There's a lot of magic going on, man. So we're just going to do a little bit of a rundown of what is happening, because day one is where you're going to be having the Modern and the Legacy events, which it seems to be these are going to be the big ones, right? This is what a lot of the super tournament players, the guys who are super into Magic, who want to be those tournament players, this is the ones that they're going to be going for.
Yeah, I mean, Modern's the most popular format, and Modern's going to bring the biggest crowd. Standard will actually just be changing over. There's going to be a rotation in a couple of weeks. So,
that's right.
Yeah, so Standard will be really fresh. But Modern is the one that people can come down. It's the good, happy medium between Legacy and Standard. And then Legacy, of course, there's such a rich scene in the Northwest for, like, you know, Magic is from here. So a lot of people have cards, and they can actually still play Legacy and Legacy players are passionate. They will travel. They're like, I see a Legacy event. I see cash prizes. I'm going to go play. Cool. End of story. Like, they go out of their way.
I know there's a couple of major Legacy events in, on the East Coast, where that's the pull. It's like a lot of Legacy players, even though that we've got a very rich Legacy group here, like you said, because of the fact that a lot of the cards are out there, there seems to be a lot of high-profile players from the East Coast as well. So it's kind of nice to have something of this caliber on the West Coast.
Yeah. Legacy, actually, they just did GP Atlanta, and I know a score of people that flew from over here to go over there because I think it was like the only other Legacy event going on besides Atlanta, mine, and then nothing else for the rest of the year.
Wow, so really? Unless
you want to travel like out of the country. Japan, I know that Japan has a lot of Legacy events. It's a very rich culture over there as well. People love Legacy over there. And so unless you're willing to travel out of the country, like Atlanta and then me, and then that's it for the rest of the year.
That is crazy. And I mean, this event that you're doing, again, if you look up, if you just look on Facebook and look up Puget Sound Battleground 2, you'll have all the information, all of it right there. Super easy way to get to that. Is it available on any other website? Maybe on Geek Fortress or anything along those lines?
Yeah, it's also on our website, geekfortressgames.com. Right when you go to the thing there, there's an image that takes you right to that event.
Perfect.
But that event will have all the information on there. We've found that that's just the best way because we put all the info on there. The event is shareable. You can share it, which we always recommend. Just like any. Anyway, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not very active on there, but I'll just mostly either retweet about like the events that we do, other Magic related things, or just Seahawks related stuff.
You're in the Pacific Northwest. So
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. If it's not Magic or Seahawks related, I'm probably not your guy. So,
and this is some major prizes we're talking about here. There is a cap on all the events, but if you hit the cap on that Modern event, $6,000 in total prizes. That's amazing, dude.
And it actually Everett. So the funny thing is Everett is actually a little bit cheaper than Tacoma. So we could actually we actually upped the prizes for this one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because it's I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but it's a couple $1,000 cheaper. So like that actually we just pushed into the prize pool, and we had 215-ish people show up for Modern down in Tacoma. So I'm really hoping we get really close to that number, and I kind of hit the caps on the events based off of what we did last time. So Legacy's right around 150.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of players around here that are looking forward to this event. And I'm really hoping that cap is a realistic number that we can do. Plus that number for Modern, I believe I hit the cap for 7 rounds. Anything after that, then we go into the 8th round, and then it's way too long of a day at that point. Then it's an actual Magic Fest without a day two, and you're just like, gosh, because then if you make top 8, you're playing 3 more.
And I remember that happening, I mean, way back in the day, going to like the Wizards of the Coast Game Center up here in Seattle in the University District, where you would be in a tournament, and you're like, all right, I'm at the end of this tournament at 10 p.m. Yes, I made top 8. That means 3 more rounds. That means, and usually those aren't timed. So it would be, quote unquote, 3 hours worth of Magic. But depending on what you're playing, that could be into 2 or 3 in the morning for Magic.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that you're a little cognizant of that you're like, hey, guys, we all love Magic, but we also like sleeping, resting, eating, showering, all those fun things that you can do around Magic.
Right, yeah. And we don't. We definitely, like, I've played in those before, so I know what 8 rounds feels like. And the thing is like, if you go, like, a couple people past the cutoff, you have to do those 8 rounds. That is what competitive events say. I think it's 226. So if you got 228, that is another round. And
you're begging those two people. You're like, hey, can I just give you your money back? And please. Like all the other players are like, please.
Yeah, and we encourage people to show up, but at the same time, we encourage up to 226. After that, you are more encouraged to maybe play Legacy or 2 of the other formats that are there. But yeah.
So, and 2 of the other formats that are happening on, this is just day 1, by the way, 93-94, which is cards that are only legal that were printed in 1993-94, correct?
Right, yeah. So it is Alpha, Beta, Unlimited, revised, and then it's the side sets, which is Legends, Antiquities, Arabian Nights, the Dark, and then there's a bunch of different ways to do it, but on the Pacific Coast rules, we also include Fallen Empires. There is...
what, for Aliopile?
Yeah. I think it's to give Goblin... him to Torak and Goblin Grenade, I think are like the two
good
cards.
Good call.
But it's really strange that like there's different rule sets for 93, 94. I know that it's a big thing over in Europe, and they don't allow Fallen Empires.
Interesting.
We allow the gold-bordered cards and the collector's edition cards. You know, you can play the power from that or whatever, and they don't allow that over in Sweden. So, your pocket's got to be deep to go play over there.
Yeah, because a lot of the times with Magic, and especially nowadays, even with, like, a modern deck, it can get into the multiples of thousands. But when you're talking 93, 94...
Yeah, that's just one piece of power.
Yeah, exactly.
One card.
And at that point, too, when you go into an event like this, there's going to be somebody that's going to be the whale, that's going to have all these things. And so it gets into that sort of arms race where you absolutely need these cards in order to compete. And sometimes, you know, maybe you can get away with a goblin deck and have those goblin grenades if you got the Fallen Empires. But if you don't, you need the actual power. And those are literal, actual, like, European nobles playing this game at this point.
And you know, of the irony of all of that is the person that won the event that we did down in Tacoma was literally just playing a white weenie deck.
Dude, like, powerful, man.
I don't think that thing could have cost more than like... I mean, of course, he did have some of the more expensive cards. Like, but if you were to strip away just the power in there, you're looking at like a $100 deck. It was Savannah Lions. And
those were the cards that helped me win a lot of tournaments in my youth, man.
It was
all
so
the
funny.
Punk Knights, White Knights, Crusades, and Savannah Lions.
He just played a couple of little guys and strip mined a couple lands away and then just attacked for four, attacked for four. And that was it. It was just like, oh my gosh, this white weenie deck's actually going to... And the guy he was playing against had everything. I mean, it was power. It was everything. I mean, when you add it all up, I mean, it's probably like a $20,000 deck.
Oh, my goodness.
It is absurd. It's a brand new car. He's just shuffling it. and it looks so good when you just lay it all out. And then he gets beat down by Savannah Lions. And they weren't even like expensive ones. They were revised $4 Lions.
Beat up.
and played. And I think some of them like were drawn on because it doesn't matter as long as you're playing with the original cards in the format. And the format is the stigma is that it's very unaffordable. But, you know, yes, there are some cards that are expensive. And that's just the way that some things are in some.
Absolutely.
You know, there are expensive guitars versus cheaper guitars and whatnot. It just with anything. But with this format, you can build a deck relatively inexpensive, and then you can buy the collector's edition, which is still expensive, you know. But I mean, like, just as an example, a Mox Pearl probably costs like $2,000, but you can buy the collector's edition one for like $300, and it is very playable, and that's a much more affordable if you want to get into this type of format. But you don't necessarily need that. It's just helpful, but you can still win with creatures and creature removal and going fast.
How Magic was invented and how they wanted it to be.
It was just as Garfield intended, you know, just slam down dudes and turn sideways. Sometimes just gets the job done. So that's a really cool format for sure. And the people are really passionate. We had people fly out from Vegas. I was looking at the ticket sales and Pittsburgh, California,
that's
Texas,
amazing.
And I was just like, these guys are dedicated. There's actually, this weekend, there's actually an event, an old school event going on in Italy. And I see people that are buying tickets flying to Italy to go play in these events.
I had a friend that is doing that as well. And is it the Fish Liver Oil one? Or because I know they have one as well like that where something ridiculous like that. But it's one that, again, everyone around the world is going to go check out.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, I think, one of the largest old school gatherings. We had 80 to 90 people show up at our event last May. And I'm just seeing these, and I'm just like, these guys are dedicated, and obviously they're not hurting for money, so flying somewhere.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
When you're playing with a deck that you could just trade for a brand new vehicle, like getting a $200 ticket to fly to
just
SeaTac.
Traveling with that thing, though, man, it's going to be briefcase, handcuffed,
glued to my hand.
Like, there's plenty of other events, and if people just want to look up Puget Sound Battleground 2, you can find out all of those. And if maybe you're not made of money, and maybe you're just doing drafts, and you're just doing standard, you're going to be having demand on on-demand Winnebox events the entire time, correct?
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to have a ton of Throne of Eldraine, which is the new set. The pre-release is this weekend.
Oh, yeah!
It comes out the following week. So the set will be about a month old, which should still be pretty fresh. So we'll be doing, you know, just regular drafts for $15, just pretty typical. We'll be doing sealed as well, and then we'll also be doing Winnebox, where basically you have an eight-person pod. Everyone pays $15. It's single elimination. The winner of the three-round event gets a box. That's it. $15 yeah. box. You win three in a row. And we'll be just doing that just until we run out of stuff. I mean,
that's amazing.
Yeah, we'll go through tons of boxes over the weekend. That'll be all weekend as well. Not just on Saturday, but on Sunday as well. Just win a box, $15, draft sealed, and until we run out of stuff. So,
and if you're somebody who has been always more interested in maybe the artistry and the visual side of Magic the Gathering, and even if you're a player, you can appreciate the art a lot of the times. You have an amazing list of guests, of artists who have done stuff across all of Magic, and it's pretty stellar that you've been able to do this. And you had artists for the first one, correct?
Yeah, we did. I reached out to Anson Maddox, who I've actually had in my store a couple times, and I've met over the years and met, like, I mean, every, you know, he was local, you know, every con, every PAX, I just always would meet him, and finally I was like, hey, I had an anniversary coming up, and then he came up to the store, and then we had a great time, and then since then we've been able to, like, build a friendship, and then he was able to actually really help me out with reaching out to all of the other artists, because they're very, like, clicky. Uh-huh. So if, like,
okay,
one of
sense.
Them
yeah.
says, hey, this is actually a cool thing, the rest of them are like, okay, we're on board. You
cool.
know, we've never heard of this guy, but if you are getting the acknowledgement of one of our fellow artists, sure, that's all we need. And then it just spiraled from there. Brian Snooty reached out, and then him and Julie Barrow, they reached out for the Tacoma event, and then Anson brought in a lot of other people. And then for the Everett one, we just were like, okay, let's see if we can get some of the people from Tacoma, but also some newer ones, some of the old school vintage artists, because so many of them are from around here.
Which you don't think about. You're like, oh, but then you realize, oh, yeah, the game was essentially created here. And what do you need from this area would be the artists that originally were in this area during that time.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really interesting listening to them talk. Like, one thing that I really wanted to do that I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to do it at some point, but I really, they liked the idea of a panel. Just up there talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Just talking about, yeah, like, what it was like, because I was in a chat with them when I was telling them all the information, and all of a sudden they just kind of started going off on like old time stories, and I was listening or reading it, and they're talking about how, like, they were doing the artwork for Magic in, like, each other's parents' basement because none of them could afford anything because they're 20 something year old artists, and 20 something year old artists are not making a whole lot.
No, not
and
at
so
all.
They're like, yeah, so they're crashing on couches, literally inventing the artwork for Magic because none of them, and then finally they were, like, getting paid, I believe, in like Magic or in Wizard stock or whatever, because they couldn't fully pay him yet, you know, because the game hadn't quite been out. So they're like, look, we're going to get you eventually, you know, and then finally, of course, it blows up and everything is great and fine now. But yeah, there are a lot of them are local and they're driving from all over Seattle.
That's
you
amazing.
Know, and so, yeah, it's really exciting. And one big thing that I always want to do is support the artists. So
good call.
Because they bring in so many people. They're really, you know, they're good people. One of them was even super local. Jesper lived in Snohomish for a while.
Really?
And that's where my store is. And so I was talking to him about that. And now I think he's out in Kamano or somewhere. I don't know where he's at now. But it was just funny because he's like, yeah, I lived in Snohomish for a while. I was like, that's exactly where my store is. And supporting the artists is, they bring in a lot of people. And you know, mm-hmm. what they do to like start the game up and everything like that, and you look at the artwork and it's so nostalgic, you know, and so it's they're a really big part of it.
And it's what drew a lot of people into the game. Like, the mechanics are one thing and you'll figure those out, but the high fantasy, a lot of these, I mean, the game was originally made so people could play it as a short way during a break for Dungeons and Dragons. So you needed that sort of draw to that, and that's what these artists brought. So you should be able to give them some props and see them in person and maybe get some cards signed and buy some prints from them and do all that fun stuff because they are the ones that really brought this all to life. And again, this is the Puget Sound Battleground. You can get more information, like I said, Puget Sound Battleground 2 on Facebook. But if you just go to geekfortressgames.com, you'll be able to find out more information. And a big thing about this, you can go to the event even if you're not necessarily sure if you want to play, because it's going to be all ages and they can go and check it out, correct?
Right, yeah. It's free to just go in, which is a big thing going back to the artists. Like, that's what we want to be able to support. And we don't want to charge people just to walk in the doors, because we want people to be able to walk in the doors. And if you want to play an event, go play an event. And if you want to play in the main event, that's fine too. Or if you just want to go in there, we have multiple vendors that are going to be set up, a couple local stores here, actually. One of them.
Shout out to Zulus.
Yep. One of them you're familiar with. I've known Matt for a very long time, long before either of us had opened a game store. And so I reached out to him, and he's really excited about it. And then David as well over at Pangfi MTG. They are always at Magic Fest and stuff. The local. And
I think I sold them some cards in the past.
Yeah. And so they have a ton of stock, and so they have a huge setup on each one, and they're going to be doing some cool stuff. So we wanted to, like, if you want to enter the event, we don't want to try to, like, you know, nickel and dime people. We want you to come in for free, check out the vendors and support the local vendors, check out the artists and support the artists for sure. Do on-demand events if you want to. If you don't, great. It's just all about trying to get people in there. The people that want to play competitive Magic, they'll play.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen. Yeah. But it's the people that want to maybe just check out an event for the first time, because maybe they don't want to drive all the way into Seattle, when usually where Magic Fest is, or Tacoma a couple times, you know, and they just want to, like, maybe bring their kids down and look at these artworks, you know, because I have a lot of people that come in and they're like, oh my gosh, Magic's still around. 20 years ago, I was in college. Now I have my kids and they're, like, interested in what is going on. And so they get to see a lot of their childhood artwork. Like, me personally, I still remember the first Magic card I ever found.
What was that?
I saw Lord of the Pit, and I never looked back.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I found 7th grade me. I was 11 or 12 or whatever.
Lord of the Pit.
Found Lord of the Pit on the ground, and I was just like, I was already into comics and sports cards, but I was like, what is this cool-looking demon, and how do I do this? and that was it. I was like, I took it to my local card shop. They gave me a stack of garbage at that point, and I was just
But you didn't care.
I didn't care, because I got more, and that was the whole idea. It's like, you know, I mean, that was like, that was the end of it. I've been hooked ever since. I mean, like, I never, ever, ever forgot it. And then I saw all these other cards and, you know, iconic artwork, like by Douglas Schuller, the demonic tutor. And
yes.
And Melissa Benson has one of my all time favorite artworks as the Shivan Dragon. And so it's like,
dude, yeah, when you see that and you're like, this is the most powerful creature ever. And over the years, it's been one of those Magic the Gathering icons. It's one of those things that when you look at that and you see that picture of his claw looking down at you about ready to eat your face, you know what's going to happen, and you know that it's a Magic the Gathering card.
And all of those artworks and then the artists that brought them to life, a lot of them are going to be there. I think we have 9 artists lined up.
That's awesome.
And they're all like some of the old school artworks. And then I had one of the artists actually reached out to 2 other artists, friends of his who are in the area. He's like, hey, he was at the last one. And then he's like, hey, I really want to bring these guys over to the new one. Do you mind if they show up? So they're like inviting their friends over to this
event.
That is cool. Which is like, I mean, you know, kid me is just like, oh my gosh, what is going on? I'm in a chat room with all of like these people that I grew up just like, you know, just loving
adoring
their artwork.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're reaching out to me and they're like, hey, we want to be a part of your event. And I'm just like,
thank you.
Yes, please. Yes, to all of you, you know, we're not worthy, you know, it's just like, and so, you know, they have a great time, which is great. You know, all of the events, you know, the Canadian Highlanders, another event that we're going to be having as well. And it's just like all of these events that bring people to, because it's all about the events that make people want to travel.
Yeah.
You know, the old school players will travel. The Canadian Highlander, we have a bunch of friends that live up north that come down for these events as well, also locally. And it's just like, it's going to be just a great 2-day event. And then the team trios on Sunday is exactly what you want about Magic. It is playing as a team, playing with your friends, and slinging spells. I mean, that's like,
yeah.
There's nothing better than like the team trio where you can actually talk to your friends and converse and strategize, like,
and figure out plans of attack and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's one thing that you cannot do normally in modern. You can't just have your friends sit next to you and be like, "Oh, don't do that." You know, that's literally against the rules.
Yeah.
And so that's why the team event, the team trios, is so much fun, because now people can actually sit there and you can talk and you can strategize, and you get to play everything. You get a standard player, you get a modern player, and you get a legacy player. So you reach out to all three of the formats, you get to play with your friends. You know, we do it like every other month up at my store, and we'll get like 20 something teams or whatever, and even some players from Wizards of the Coast that can come up, because they can only play if it meets a certain criteria of prize wise, but they really want to, because it's exactly, you carpool, you play together, you play all day, and it's great. So
it's perfect. I love it. Again, if you want to go check this out, geekfortressgames.com has the links to those. I would suggest, if you want to do the big events like the Modern and the Legacy, or even the team one, those do have caps, so you might want to pre-register early. If you're on the fence and not sure exactly where you want to go with that, you can just show up and hopefully register there. But again, it'll be kind of close when it comes down to all of it.
The team trios event, that one's gonna sell out. I'm just gonna tell you that right now. It's only 126 teams, because that's the cap going into the next set of rounds. So we capped it at that, which is roughly 350-ish people.
Yeah, but still a bunch of people. Yeah,
and the idea is that there's only so many players. So, you know, we had over 150 legacy players show up last time and over 200 modern players. Well, there's only room for 126 of them now. So it's like,
Both
of those were more than what the team trios can handle. And yeah, maybe some of them will play other formats and whatnot, but the team trios one is one that I definitely recommend people signing up for as early as possible, which all the tickets are available, and they'll be available up until the end of the week when the event is actually happening. So Thursday will be the last day to purchase the tickets, and then Friday will be kind of a cool down day where I get everything set up, and then
cool down for everyone except for you.
Yeah, exactly. That's when I'll be adding 700 people to all these events. And then Saturday there will be a spot, if there are any tickets left available, to sign up day of, but I really don't recommend it. Like,
That you're playing with fire when it comes down to that.
Yeah, so, I hate turning people away. I always feel really, really bad. I don't want to say, "Oh, you traveled all the way here to play on our event. Sorry." Like, nothing makes me feel worse. So please don't do that.
So the Angel of the Winds Arena, if you go to geekfortressgames.com, November 9th and November 10th, this is happening. Check it out. Dylan, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, and I'm really excited. And like I said, go online. And let's bring the people here. That's all we need. The event's set up. Now we just need the players. I'm excited. I'm so excited.
I could tell.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dylan. I hope everyone out there is also excited for the new release. It's really interesting to see it. Like, I'm kind of hoping that it'll feel like Innistrad did for horror, just the way they're doing it with fairy tales. And
yeah,
I
it's clever.
It is.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's not too clever for itself. Like, I just kind of feel that maybe the adventures are a little confusing for people. But we'll see how those work out.
I'm an old person, and if I can get it, and I'm an old Magic player, but it's pretty easy. I mean, you can play a spell out of your hand, throw it out of play, and then you'll cast it as a creature when you get to, it could even be that same turn. Not that difficult of a concept.
I'm hoping not. But again, also, pre-releases, which are coming up, if they haven't already come up for you, a really easy way to learn the mechanics, because everyone's learning them.
Yeah, man, it's a great flavor for Halloween.
Good call,
I have a feeling once you start playing with the new cards, it'll be a lot easier. It's like all those things. The first time is always a little confusing, and then you play them, and you're like, this is just exiled. Okay, I can do that. But it's going to be fun.
Moving on from the Magic Battlegrounds on the tabletop, let's talk some board games. BJ, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I got something old and something new, and actually...
are they borrowed or are they blue?
Yeah, anything blue.
Yes. Yeah, a quick aside, I just recently, off my friend, finally convinced him to let me have his Twilight Imperium 2nd Edition.
Okay, so do you have all of them now?
I don't have 1st Edition.
Oh.
For collector's reasons, I would love to get 1st Edition.
Yeah.
But actually, for play reasons, I got 2nd Edition. So I'll talk about it after. A couple of weeks, we're going to actually try it. We'll be using the updated 4th Edition components so that, because the 2nd Edition components are 20 years old. old, and for the time, they were pretty cool, but now they're kind of really dated. But the rules themselves, it'd be interesting to play Twilight Imperium before the massive changes that were made for TI3.
Wow.
And they were big, big changes. So now, I'd like to see what that game felt like when people played it.
Now, did you get in on 3?
I did. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay,
totally
okay.
In on, that's how I got introduced.
Okay,
and
it's
a much different game than TI2. And I want to see what it was like 20 years ago
cool.
or even 25 years ago when Christian Peterson first released it. So I got that going on. But speaking of old games, there's a game that my buddy Eric turned me on to called Level 7 Invasion. And it's part of the Level 7 gaming world. They have many different games. This one here has a very pandemic feel to it as aliens are landing on the planet and spreading their alien-like ways. And you have to stop it. And it is a cooperative game, but the cool thing about it is that you still have enough to do on your own, including these awesome player boards with these cool dials that you move around to set different resources and different conditions. I was, you know, I go over to my buddy Eric's house, guy that made the game Slaughterball, and he and I don't have the same tastes really when it comes to games, but we're friends enough that we'll always give at least a game a try.
That's nice.
And it'll be like, oh, it's my turn to play a game you don't like, and he goes, all right, next week we'll play a game that I know you don't like. I was surprised at how much I like Level 7 Invasion because I don't like Pandemic. I stopped playing Pandemic, gave all my copies away because it's
I have them.
Yeah, it's an alpha game. It's just, you know.
Oh, one person can basically dictate what's going on. Yeah.
Unless you have an alpha that's aware they're an alpha and are able to, like.
Kind of, yeah. Like
your turn.
Delegate.
Yes.
And the game is hard and bores me because it's the same thing. Hopefully we can beat it before it beats us with it's really unfair. And, you know, I don't like that. I like to be able to think I can beat a game, not because the game is just designed to be really, really hard. And, you know, some people love that kind of thing. I don't. Not a big cooperative game player. I just don't like it. Though, Level 7 Invasion gives you enough to do, and it's like you're playing for yourself, even though you're playing for other players, and you've got a lot to keep track of that it's really hard to alpha somebody else. You really need to keep track of your own stuff, and to the point where somebody forgot to do something important in the game and we had to take an extra turn than we shouldn't have. Like, we needed to get this guy from one place to another, and we're like, dude, you were in charge of him. We can't be keeping, you know, it was one of those things. Like, how did you forget you were in charge of that guy? Really good game. I forget when it was put out, but hold on. If I go here, probably it'll tell me. But it can go between an hour to 2 hours, but it really depends on, you know, however it goes. And Will Schoonover designed it. Good art from Michael Jenkins. Privateer Press actually put it out. And I don't know if you can get it anymore. I think you may be able to, but it's been a while. I mean, like, it's been a while since it was out. And it's pretty cool. It's set in the year... The very far future year of 2020.
So S is about to go down in a year, guys. Just a spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I only have 1 year?
yeah. Sorry, bro.
The world hovers on the brink of annihilation, figured out. And the mechanisms are area majority influence. It's a cooperative game, dice rolling, trading. It's actually a pretty cool game, and it made me think of Pandemic. It's a lot more than that, but it's almost like Risk and Pandemic at the same time.
Interesting.
In its own weird way. So that's an old game that I really liked. And then, of course, there's a new game, which has really gotten a lot of talk, and because of the fact it's a very pretty game. It's a space game, but doesn't use the traditional space colors. It's super bright pinks, super bright pastel blues, bright greens, bright yellows. It's called Black Angel, and it's by Sebastian Dujardin and Xavier Georges and Elaine Orban. I hope I said your name right. Ian O'Toole did the art, and Ian O'Toole said, look, I'll do this game, but can I do space the way I want to? I don't want to do it. And they're just like whole black theme and everything's dark. And so he did great art for this. Pearl Games put it out. And it is just basically human.
That is pretty.
It's a beautiful game. And the way it's designed, the board that the ship is traveling on has these interconnected sort of like puzzle-like pieces that are sort of these long pieces that you put together almost Tetris-like. But they're all the same shape. But what you do is when you travel through space, you take the front piece, flip it over, the back piece, flip it over and put it up front. And that's how space continues to go until you reach the planet Spez, which is that's the planet we're trying to get to.
Spez.
We're trying to get to Spez. Idea as simple is, hey, guess what? Earth is dying. And so the corporations all got together and said, we need to at least preserve some of us. So we're all in sort of like a cryogenic place. And the artificial intelligence is running the ship. And the corporations are in charge of a particular artificial intelligence on the ship. So corporations are still competing via AI to see who can get us to Spez and start humanity all over again. And whoever does the best job, that corporation will be in charge. We meet aliens along the way that are having trouble with these creatures called Reavers. So they have no problem working with our AI.
Aliens are the friends you make along the way.
It's really, really cool. It's okay. Got, yeah, they're like, we need bodies. It's like, it's not that we have technological superiority over these creatures attacking us, but there are so many of them.
Yeah.
We need bodies. So sure, humans, come on out. We'll help
That's
you in
how
space.
The Zergs get you, man.
Exactly. They're totally Zergs coming at you, or called Reavers. I should say Ravagers, but you might want to call them Reavers for all you Serenity fans and you know, Firefly people.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a really good game. I like the mechanics of the game, the way you get technology. You have to slide cards off a board in order to get technology to work a certain way and score victory points. So you may have like this one piece of tech that's working real well for you, but in order to get your victory condition on the board, you're going to have to push this one off. It's a very interesting concept of
wow.
How do I put a piece on the board? I've got to slide it off the board because there's already three pieces on there, so
dang it,
you're getting knocked off.
Wow.
A very, very cool game. It's called Black Angel Pearl Games. I enjoy it. And all of our friends enjoy it, and I immediately went out and bought a copy. So great sci-fi theme that looks really pretty.
Nice. Thank you so much. And now it is time for
The Geek Sheet with Vicky B.
Vicky, what do you got for us?
All right. I have a lot of casting rumors.
Yes. Oh, rumors.
And I really love casting rumors because it kind of gets you thinking like, oh, I would really love this person to play this character, or maybe I don't. Maybe they should play this character. I want this actor to play this character instead. So I have it like all over the board, different kinds of rumors and different kinds of like people saying, hey, I want to be this character.
Oh, the ones that are like, I want to do this.
Like, hi, I'm over here. Please.
Come
thank
on,
you.
Guys. Please,
ever
please.
Since Ryan Reynolds said, I want to be Deadpool, everybody thinks they can do what they want.
I think what he said was, I am Deadpool.
Yeah.
And then everyone just kind of agreed
so
with
that's
it
wrong.
At that point.
You have to say you
yeah,
are.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay.
So Method Man, we all know Method Man, the rapper.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang Clan. He's lobbying for the role of Bishop in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is funny because he actually played himself on an episode of Luke Cage, which is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I am Bishop.
Yeah, so he's currently lobbying. There was some fan
art.
I
would like to see Bishop. But also because also that leads in towards Cable and then Forge and all of those guys that are
You've
in that.
You've seen Cable. You're
I have.
Okay.
But here's the deal.
Thanos is the best Cable.
You can... You're not wrong. But you can also incorporate him into this because, I mean, if they bring Deadpool in, they should bring in Cable. And then you can have Josh Brolin because Thanos is gone. So you can just have him seamlessly come in. And then you just have Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool looking at Josh Brolin's Cable and be like, you look kind of familiar. Weren't you a little purpley before?
I mean, there were a couple of references in the last Deadpool movie.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if Idris Elba didn't already play Heimdall, and I think he's kind of soured from being stuck in like Marvel contracts and stuff like that,
yeah.
He would be a great Bishop.
Yeah, I would like that as well. But I'm okay with Method Man. He's done some movies before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I mean, seriously, like Bishop is a character from the far future who comes back and you have all those sort of things. And it's kind of a serious character, comic book serious.
So was Cable, wasn't he, really?
Yeah, you can have some fun with those characters mm-hmm. and yeah. still make it all right. And then again, mix it in with X-Force. He was X-Force. And then you go with Deadpool, so it's the not quite serious X-Force.
I think Rev's talking like Phase 8.
Yeah, I know at this point, but hey,
there
I got
is,
a dream.
There is another actor that is wanting to play
somebody.
A superhero type person, actually a villain.
Oh, really?
Yep, but IMDb did an interview with Eddie Redmayne, and they asked him what supervillain he would like to play, and he responded that he would love to play the Riddler. Face-wise, I think he's got it.
Yeah.
He's got the structure.
He also, the way that, and I can't remember his name, but the dude that played him on Gotham. He really, they look similar. And
yeah.
I feel like they have a tone that can be similar because Eddie Redmayne was, He was unfortunately in Jupiter Ascending, but he was in that. He was also in the
he
the movie
the worst
about,
thing in that movie.
No,
Ethan Hawking.
Stephen Hawking.
Stephen Hawking. Did I say Ethan Hawking?
Yeah, you should, Ethan Hawking. He was in the Stephen Hawking movie.
That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Eddie Redmayne's a great actor. And
you're thinking of Corey Michael Smith.
Yeah.
Thank you, Corey.
And Corey Michael Smith was an amazing
was a great Riddler.
He was a great Riddler on that show. And I mean, out of all the villains on Gotham, I thought he was fantastic.
And one of the things that Rev and I have been agreeing on for a while, since we figured this out, I think we know who the next Riddler needs to be, especially
has
if we're,
to be.
We're going with an older
Danny DeVito.
No, oh he was God, already yes. the Penguin, and that's you right. can't take that from him.
He's the Penguin and the Riddler together, the Piddler.
No. Wait, what?
Okay,
no.
Never mind.
After watching his performance in American God, especially season two, American Gods,
mm-hmm.
Orlando Jones.
Yes, yes. Mr. Nancy,
oh,
his
yeah.
speeches.
Anansi.
Yeah, like his speeches, especially the, Angry Gets S Done,
oh,
is
yeah.
one of the best speeches. And the way he monologues, you just, I want to see a Riddler monologue come yeah. across the way mm-hmm. he does Mr. Nancy.
Yeah, that is the idea, that the Riddler is so brilliant that he just believes nobody is ever going
to
solve
and
his
there needs
S.
to be a little bit of contempt in his voice.
But he's also looking for someone who can match him, which is mm-hmm. why Batman Riddler, that relationship is
yeah.
it's different than the Joker relationship. I love it.
Oddly enough, I feel like the Riddler would work a lot better in this day and age, too, because of technology. You could hide stuff and manipulate data. And
yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. He would be
a
like
more.
A programmer
yeah.
who
right.
was just like hiding things subliminally and like even just like the programming language.
It's like find my Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Just
exactly.
like Jim Carrey was.
Well, I mean, he did have that wonderful green suit, and it sparkled. That was cool.
Actually, that was cool.
It really was.
Cool. Yeah. And if Jim could have been a little bit more subdued, but I don't think Joel Schumacher wanted that anyway. Mm-hmm.
Tommy Lee Jones wishes he was a little more subdued.
I still liked his Two-Face, though. Tommy,
it was, too. Yeah. It was
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah, it was
Those
good.
Movies are good, but not for,
well, they're something.
For different reasons.
Yeah.
But going back to talking about the Penguin, apparently the Batman is eyeing Jonah Hill to play a secret role opposite to Robert Pattinson. And a lot of people, because it's Jonah Hill, are assuming it's the Penguin, but he's lost a lot of weight again recently.
But then again, I mean, granted, it wasn't until the end of Gotham before mm-hmm. you know, the Penguin actually gained weight.
And it's not that, I mean, it's not too outside of the reason that they could do a fat suit or something like that. Like Chris Hemsworth wasn't fat when he did Fat
right.
Thor.
He wasn't?
No, he wasn't.
And it's
wait
like,
a minute.
I'm
taking
pretty
the
sure.
weight out of it, though, he does have the nose and the face
he does.
Of a Cobblepot.
He does.
Of a Cobblepot.
Yeah.
Cobblepot.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if he can pull something like that off. You know, Jonah Hill, it's I don't know what to make of him as an actor. Sometimes he's really great, and sometimes I'm like,
he's done some weird
I don't
stuff,
know.
Like Moneyball, and he was in that Maniac or whatever on
yes,
Netflix.
Yes, Maniac was so good.
But some people are thinking he might be the Riddler, too.
Huh.
Oh.
Some of the fan art they did wasn't awful. They made him look really slimy and creepy.
I don't know about that.
Creepy
I don't know about
Riddler.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I want him as the Riddler.
Yeah, just bring him back as the Piddler.
I looked up some other villains. I was thinking either Mad Hatter or Puppet. Was it Puppet Master?
Oh, Master.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Mad that Hatter. Might be a good one, too.
I miss the Mad Hatter from the 60s where his hat popped up and the eyes hypnotized everybody.
Oh,
so good.
That's funny. It's just like, I love all of the fan theories and the fan castings. That I like that. Especially if you go a little bit deeper than just what they look like. As compared to what the comic book characters look mm-hmm. like, because you got to get that whole vibe. And sometimes it's not what they look like, but it's how they bring other roles.
I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
am. I'm excited for Pattinson's Batman, and I'm excited to see new people, you know, do this mythology their way. That's what's so great about mythology.
Absolutely.
Well, until next time, guys, stay nerdy.